Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a late-breaker article by Sareva et al. Plasma linoleic acid is associated with pediatric sepsis phenotype and acute kidney injury. Objectives. Linoleic acid is the most abundant polyunsaturated fatty acid in the diet, and it is a precursor to inflammatory lipid mediators called oxylipins. The role of linoleic acid and its oxylipins in pediatric sepsis and organ injury is uncertain. Recently, pediatric sepsis phenotypes were described with phenotype D characterized by the highest proportion of acute kidney injury, multiple organ failure, and risk of death. We aim to test the hypothesis that linoleic acid may play a role in sepsis-associated organ dysfunction. We therefore investigated whether increasing plasma linoleic acid and linoleic acid-derived lipoxygenase oxylipins are associated with sepsis phenotype D and with acute kidney injury in a cohort of critically ill children with sepsis. Design. We studied a subset of 108 patients from the Phenotyping Sepsis-Induced Multiple Organ Failure Study, or PHENOMS, cohort by means of untargeted metabolomics of heparinized plasma samples. Primary outcome was phenotype group. Key secondary outcomes included acute kidney injury, defined as both creatinine greater than 1 mg per deciliter and oliguria less than 0.5 mL per kilogram per hour, other organ dysfunctions, and hospital mortality. Patients were followed up until discharge or 28 days. Setting, intensive care unit. Patients, 108 patients with sepsis. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Higher linoleic acid levels were associated with sepsis phenotype D as compared with phenotypes A to C, with an odds ratio of 1.67, a 95% confidence interval of 1.05 to 2.65, and a p-value equal to 0.03. Linoleic acid-derived oxylipins, 9-hydroxyoctadecadienoic acid, or 9-HODE, and 13-hydroxyoctadecadienoic acid, or 13-HODE, were also associated with sepsis phenotype D, jointly reported in one variable with an odds ratio of 1.26, a 95% confidence interval of 1.01 to 1.57, and a p-value equal to 0.04. Higher linoleic acid showed a trend, and 9-HODE and 13-HODE were associated with acute kidney injury. 9-HODE had an odds ratio of 1.52 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.97 to 2.38 and a p-value equal to 0.07, and 13-HODE had an odds ratio of 1.27 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.03 to 1.56 with a p-value equal to 0.02. Neither linoleic acid nor oxylipins were associated with hospital mortality. Abstract 2 is a late-breaker article by Slowicki et al. Viral and host-related factors in the nasal inflammatory response to critical bronchiolitis in infants and children. Objectives. We aim to evaluate the inflammatory cytokine response in children with critical bronchiolitis. Our secondary aims included 1. Understanding differences in inflammatory profiles between respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, rhinovirus, and polyviral infection, and 2. Examining the association between clinical risk factors and the host inflammatory response. Design. A single-center prospective cohort study of PICU patients with critical bronchiolitis. Setting. Medium-sized academic PICU from October 2021 to July 2024. Patients, 42 patients with critical bronchiolitis and 9 healthy control patients. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Nasal aspirates were obtained and cytokines measured by enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay. The influence of viral type and host factors was assessed by non-parametric testing. In an exploratory analysis, cells from the nasal aspirates of a select group of patients underwent next-generation RNA sequencing. The nasal samples from patients with critical bronchiolitis exhibited an increase in interferons, type 1, and type 2 immunity-related cytokines. We did not identify differences in cytokine levels when comparing patients with rhinovirus to those with RSV infection. Patients with multiple or greater than one bronchiolitis admissions exhibited lower levels of inflammatory cytokines compared with patients during their first bronchiolitis admission. Using RNA sequencing, a subgroup of patients with rhinovirus or RSV exhibited similar upregulation of gene pathways associated with leukocyte chemotaxis, interferon signaling, and tumor necrosis factor superfamily cytokines compared with healthy controls. Pathways associated with ciliary function were downregulated compared with controls with RSV, inducing a more pronounced downregulation than rhinovirus. Conclusions. These data demonstrate that patients with critical bronchiolitis exhibit a robust host inflammatory response independent of viral etiology. Our exploratory transcriptomic analysis showed upregulation of pro-inflammatory genes and downregulation of ciliary genes consistent with clinical characteristics of these patients at the bedside. Abstract 3 is a special article by Weiss et al., Surviving Sepsis Campaign, International Guidelines for the Management of Sepsis and Septic Shock in Children, 2026. Objectives: to update evidence-based management recommendations for clinicians caring for children, including infants, school-age children, and adolescents with sepsis or septic shock. Design: a panel of 68 international experts representing 13 international organizations, as well as 6 methodologists, was convened. A formal conflict of interest policy was developed at the onset of the process and applied throughout. Teleconferences and electronic-based discussion among the chairs, co-chairs, methodologists, and subgroup leads, as well as within subgroups, served as an integral part of the guideline development process. Methods: new priority topics and recommendations from the prior guideline iteration were used to identify population, intervention, control, and outcomes questions likely to have new or updated evidence. We conducted a systematic review to identify the best available evidence, summarize the evidence, and then assess the quality of evidence using the grading of recommendations, assessment, development, and evaluation approach. We use the evidence to decision framework to formulate recommendations as strong or conditional or as a good practice statement. In our practice statements were included when evidence was inconclusive to issue a recommendation, but the panel felt that some guidance based on practice patterns may be appropriate. Results: the panel provided 61 statements on the management of children with sepsis or septic shock. Overall, 5 were strong recommendations, 24 were conditional recommendations, and 10 were good practice statements. For 22 population intervention, control, and outcomes questions, no recommendations could be made, but for 7 of these, in our practice statements, were provided. Compared with the 2020 guidelines, 20 recommendations were new, 13 were updated for clarity and/or new evidence, 6 were reviewed but not changed, and 22 were carried forward based on consensus of the panel that new evidence was not available. Only 3 recommendations were based on high or moderate certainty of evidence. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation article by Ibrier et al., Neonatal Surgery for Congenital Heart Disease and 2-Year Neurodevelopmental Outcomes, Single-Center Retrospective Study of Postoperative Electroencephalography and Medications from 2013 to 2020. Objectives: to first evaluate the association between postoperative electroencephalography findings and 24-month neurodevelopmental outcomes in neonates with congenital heart disease undergoing cardiac surgery. Secondarily, to explore the association between perioperative medication exposure and outcome. Design: single-center retrospective cohort study in a university-affiliated tertiary pediatric center between February 2013 and September 2020. Patients: neonates, postmenstrual age greater than 36 weeks, with congenital heart disease requiring cardiopulmonary bypass surgery at postmenstrual age younger than 44 weeks, who had neurodevelopmental assessments at 24 months using the Bayley Scales of Infant and Toddler Development, 3rd edition. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: out of 345 neonates with complex congenital heart disease, there were 68 neonates in our clinical outcome cohort, and 32 of 68, or 47%, in the postoperative electroencephalography cohort. In the electroencephalography group, a quantitative electroencephalography index of discontinuity index was calculated and averaged from postoperative recordings between 15 and 24 hours. Here, adjusted analyses showed greater postoperative electroencephalography discontinuity index was associated with lower BSID-3 motor scores at 24 months at -0.48 with a 95% confidence interval of -2.31 to -0.51 and a p-value equal to 0.009. In the complete clinical cohort, linear regression models were used to explore the association between medication dosing, intraoperative, 24 hours postoperative, and cumulative doses with BSID-3 scores at 24 months. Higher early postoperative opioid doses were associated with better motor outcomes, as represented by the standardized coefficient B and its 95% confidence interval, including global motor composite scores with a complete cohort B equal to 0.33 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.77 to 5.41, and a p-value equal to 0.01, and D, transposition of the great artery subgroup, with a B equal to 0.37, a 95% confidence interval of 0.67 to 5.41, and a p-value equal to 0.013, fine motor scaled scores, complete cohort, with a b-value equal to 0.26, a 95% confidence interval of 0.01 to 0.97, and a p-value equal to 0.049, and gross motor scaled scores, complete cohort, B equal to 0.26 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.01 to 0.94 and a p-value equal to 0.047. Conclusions. Our single-center retrospective study shows an association between early postoperative electroencephalography findings and outcomes after neonatal cardiac surgery. Electroencephalography discontinuity may be a potential biomarker of later adverse motor outcomes. Future evaluations are needed to clarify the interaction between postoperative electroencephalography monitoring, pharmacologic exposures, and later neurodevelopment. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by Mackey et al. Heart rate variability discriminates outcomes after pediatric cardiac arrest. Objective: to assess the performance of heart rate variability in discriminating death and functional neurologic outcomes in children post-cardiac arrest. Design: single-center retrospective review of physiologic and clinical data. Setting: 46-bed PICU. Patients: children older than 28 days and 18 years old or younger admitted to the PICU after in-hospital or out-of-hospital cardiac arrest between 2013 and 2019. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The primary outcome was all-cause in-hospital mortality within 1 week of arrest. Secondary outcomes included functional neurologic status at hospital discharge by pediatric cerebral performance category scores and the presence of poor prognostic findings on transcranial Doppler and or electroencephalography within 72 hours of ICU admission. 75 patients were included, with a 1 week in-hospital mortality rate of 23% or 17 patients. Median integer HRV or mHRVi in the first 12 hours of PICU admission was significantly lower in patients who experienced 1 week in-hospital mortality, with a p-value less than 0.01. The 12-hour mHRVi had an area under the receiver operating characteristic curve of 0.74, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.61 to 0.86, with an area under the precision recall curves of 0.42 for discriminating 1 week in-hospital mortality, and remained statistically significant after adjusting for age, location of arrest, illness severity by pediatric risk of mortality 3 scoring, and a patient's maximum vasoactive inotropic score, with a p-value equal to 0.034. There was also a significant association seen between lower 12-hour mHRVi and poor neurologic outcomes by pediatric cerebral performance category scoring. Odds ratio was 0.26 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.076 to 0.72 with a p-value equal to 0.01. Conclusions. Lower mHRVi over the first 12 hours of PICU admission after cardiac arrest demonstrated moderate discrimination for 1 week in-hospital mortality and poor neurologic outcomes. These findings suggest that mHRVi may serve as a helpful adjunct within multimodal prognostication frameworks, though further validation in larger, diverse cohorts is required before clinical application. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Rashid Shig et al. Estimation of transpulmonary driving pressure, strain, and lung-specific elastance using volumetric methods in invasively ventilated children, a feasibility study. Objectives: to study the feasibility of integrating the nitrogen multiple breath wash-in, wash-out technique with the positive end expiratory pressure step, or PEEP step, method to estimate transpulmonary driving pressure, strain, and lung-specific elastance. Design: prospective feasibility physiology study. Setting: National Board-affiliated 30-bed quaternary care hospital PICU. Patients: invasively ventilated children from 2 months to 16 years old between December 1, 2021 and August 30, 2022. Interventions: in volume control mode, functional residual capacity was measured using the nitrogen multiple breath wash-in, wash-out technique at zero end expiratory pressure, or ZEEP, and end expiratory lung volume was measured during the PEEP step method. Measurements and main results. Data from 33 of 63 eligible subjects were analyzed, of whom 18 of 33 had pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome, or PARDS. Median FRC normalized to body weight was 15.1 milliliters per kilogram with an interquartile range of 10.6 to 20.4 milliliters per kilogram. A correlation was found between FRC and respiratory compliance at zero end expiratory pressure, with rho equal to 0.775 and a p-value less than 0.001. Strain demonstrated a positive correlation with both the transpulmonary driving pressure and plateau pressure at zero end expiratory pressure. The transpulmonary driving pressure rho was equal to 0.55 with a p-value less than 0.001, and the plateau pressure rho was equal to 0.72 with a p-value less than 0.001. Median K was lower in pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome than non-pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome subjects, but this difference was not present when K was normalized to body weight and height. For pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome, median K was 16.1 centimeters of water with an interquartile range of 10.8 to 18.6 centimeters of water, and in non-pediatric acute respiratory distress syndrome, median K was 19.84 centimeters of water with an interquartile range of 18.5 to 23.93 centimeters of water. The p-value was equal to 0.045. Conclusions. Despite technical limitations, it appears possible to estimate transpulmonary driving pressure, strain, and lung-specific elastance by integrating the PEEP step and nitrogen multiple breath wash-in, wash-out methods. Validation against the gold standard esophageal pressure manometry is warranted. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation article by Haas et al. Prevalence of food insecurity between pediatric critical care and hospital ward setting. Objective. We aim to evaluate the prevalence of food insecurity among pediatric patients admitted to the PICU, compare the prevalence between patients admitted to the PICU versus hospital medicine floor, and determine associations between the presence of food insecurity and clinical and demographic variables. Design, setting, and patients. A retrospective chart review was conducted for patients 0 to 18 years old admitted for at least 24 hours between January 1st and December 31st, 2023, to a tertiary pediatric hospital PICU or hospital medicine floor. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Food insecurity was measured using the Hunger Vital Sign tool. Self-identified demographic data were obtained and reported using descriptive statistics, and associations with food insecurity were examined using chi-square testing and logistic regression. Of the 4,457 identified patients, 2,820 met inclusion criteria, 621 in PICU, 2,199 in hospital medicine. Food insecurity prevalence was higher in PICU patients compared with those admitted to the hospital medicine floor. 9% PICU versus 6.5% hospital medicine with a p-value equal to 0.034 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.504 to 0.962. Higher odds of food insecurity were found in Black patients and patients self-identifying as Hispanic as compared with white patients. The adjusted odds ratio for Black patients was 2.4 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.39 to 4.09 and a p-value equal to 0.001. And the adjusted odds ratio for Hispanic patients was 5.44 with a 95% confidence interval of 2.94 to 9.81 and a p-value less than 0.001. Admission location, age, gender, and length of stay were not independently associated with food insecurity. Conclusions. This is the first study reported comparing the prevalence of food insecurity between PICU versus hospital medicine floor patients and the largest study to date on food insecurity prevalence in the PICU. Food insecurity was more prevalent among patients admitted to the PICU than hospital medicine floor and predominantly noted in Black patients and patients self-identifying as Hispanic. These findings highlight the need for screening and intervention strategies to address food insecurity within the ICU setting. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation article by Ishizuka et al. Validation of lung ultrasound score for disease severity and outcomes in pediatric acute respiratory failure. Objectives. The objective of this study was to investigate the validity of global lung ultrasound scores among critically ill children with different etiologies and severities of acute respiratory failure, as well as associations with outcomes. Design. Prospective observational study. Setting. PICUs at two large children's hospitals. Patients. Children receiving non-invasive or invasive mechanical ventilation and met criteria for acute respiratory distress syndrome, lower respiratory tract infection, or control group. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Lung ultrasound was performed and lung ultrasound scores calculated at two time points. 1, within 24 hours of respiratory failure for all groups, time 1, and 2, at 24 hours of time 1 for patients with acute respiratory distress syndrome and lower respiratory tract infection, time 2. A total of 76 patients were included, 25 acute respiratory distress syndrome, 26 lower respiratory tract infection, and 25 control. There was a significant difference in median time 1 global lung ultrasound scores between groups. Acute respiratory distress syndrome had 19 with an interquartile range of 12 to 24. Lower respiratory tract infection had 8 with an interquartile range of 2 to 11. And control had 2 with an interquartile range of 0 to 6 with a p-value less than 0.001. Global lung ultrasound scores remained similar from time 1 to time 2 in both acute respiratory distress syndrome and lower respiratory tract infection groups. Acute respiratory distress syndrome went from 19 to 17, and lower respiratory tract infection went from 8 to 7. There were moderate correlations between lung ultrasound scores and oxygen saturation index, peripheral oxygen saturation to FiO2 ratio, mean airway pressure, positive end expiratory pressure, and dynamic compliance. The R for oxygen saturation index was equal to 0.67 with a p-value less than 0.001. The R for peripheral oxygen saturation to FiO2 ratio was equal to negative 0.63 with a p-value less than 0.001. The R for mean airway pressure was equal to 0.63 with a p-value less than 0.001. The R for positive end expiratory pressure was equal to 0.52 with a p-value less than 0.001. And the R for dynamic compliance was equal to negative 0.43 with a p-value equal to 0.001. Higher lung ultrasound scores were associated with fewer ventilator-free days at 28 days with a p-value less than 0.001, fewer positive pressure ventilation-free days at 28 days with a p-value less than 0.001, and fewer ICU-free days at 28 days with a p-value less than 0.001. Conclusions. In critically ill children with acute respiratory failure, global lung ultrasound scores within 24 hours of admission differed by severity of parenchymal lung disease, correlated with oxygenation parameters, and were associated with patient-centered outcomes of duration of respiratory support and PICU length of stay. Abstract 9 is the PCCM Conference Report and Expert Panel by Darrington et al., Society of Critical Care Medicine 2026 Guidelines on the Care and Management of Pediatric and Neonatal Intensive Care Patients at the End of Life. Rationale: ensuring high-quality end-of-life care for neonatal and pediatric patients and their families in the ICU requires a comprehensive, evidence-based, multidisciplinary approach. Objectives: to develop and provide evidence-based recommendations for end-of-life care and management of critically ill neonatal and pediatric patients and their families. Design: the American College of Critical Care Medicine Board convened a 21-member multidisciplinary panel of experts, including the following: pediatric critical care medicine, nursing, neonatology, psychology, spiritual care, social work, child life, respiratory care, bioethics, cardiology, cardiac intensive care, palliative care, and bereaved parents. The panel included two expert methodologists specialized in developing evidence-based recommendations in alignment with the grading of recommendations, assessment, development, and evaluation, or GRADE, methodology. Conflict of interest policies were followed during all phases of guidelines development, including task force selection and voting. Methods: the panel members identified and formulated 5 population, intervention, comparator, and outcome questions. We conducted a systematic review of literature from 2000 to 2025 for each question to identify best available evidence, then statistically analyzed and assessed the certainty of evidence using the GRADE methodology. We used the GRADE evidence to decision framework to formulate the recommendations. Results: the panel generated 5 conditional recommendations and 1 good practice statement focused on advanced care planning, pediatric palliative care consultation and education, systematic symptom management, bereavement support, and health equity and end-of-life care. Conclusions: the recommendations were derived from the best available evidence at time of publication and provide valuable guidance to support end-of-life care for PICU and neonatal ICU patients and their families. The PCCM narrative this month is entitled "Sorry" by Dr. Miriam Fine-Golden. When their child is dying and you say, "I'm so sorry," and they say, "Thank you so much. Thank you for trying," and you want to say, "Don't thank me, please. Please don't thank me," but they need to, and you need to know they know you tried. They sit, you stand. And then they say, "We're ready now. Now we're ready." And you say, "Okay." The beeps stop. You breathe deeply, but still, the tears come. And you say, "I'm so sorry." And they say, "Thank you so much. Thank you for crying." And you want to say, "I shouldn't, I know. I know I shouldn't." But they want you to. And you need to know they know you cared. This concludes the abstracts for the April 2026 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.